All right. Welcome back to another week of CS75. I'm Jesse Cohen. And so last week we went over XML and how to manipulate XPaths and read all of the data that you want from your XML document. And this week we'll go over a little bit more of XML, and then we'll segue into object-oriented programming and something about classes in PHP, which I spoke about briefly at the end of section last week. And we'll stop at a couple of places along the way. So actually, last week, if you were watching, you'll remember we went really fast and we covered a lot of stuff. Well, it turns out that last week we covered a lot of the stuff that was on the schedule for this week. And because of the snow day, there was a lot of stuff that was going to happen in lecture that we didn't get to So this week will be a little bit slower. We'll take it more slowly. We'll answer your questions. And for those of you watching online, you can always email us at cs75section@gmail.com, which I will try and answer your questions live, or somebody will get back to you after section if I don't get a chance to get to them there. So let's start off with a couple of more XPath examples from last week. So if you remember, last week we were working with this file, sushi.xml. And so sushi, we had, you know, a bunch of fish, and each fish had its variation. And so you can see here, this is the file we were working with. And we had a number of ways that we manipulated that file. And so today we'll go into a couple more different XPath examples. So if we remember from last week, the key things for our XPath, like our XPath syntax was, and I'll just write them here so that you remember, we had slash, which got us the root node. We had dot, which got us our current location. We had dot dot, which got us a parent node, which this allowed you to jump backwards or up one level in the tree. So I'm going to write back here. And we also had the double slash, which allowed you to skip over levels in your tree and grab all nodes. And so these were the ones that, these are like the core ones, the ones that you'll use the most. There's also at, which grabs you attributes. And so if we go here, just a quick refresher from last week. So we had sushi, let's find a nice one. Sushi 3.php. So who remembers what this one did, or who wants to just try and figure it out by looking really quickly at this code over here? All right. So what we had here was, first of all, our first line, we were constructing this XML element, which is just a class in PHP, from our XML file. And then we were going through all of the fish nodes in this XML document. And for each fish, we were printing out some information about the fish. And so if we go here, just to show you, that was sushi3.php, I think. And then it printed us, you know, each fish had its own little select box, and we got all of the variations of the fish. And we accomplished all of this just with a couple of lines of code and two for loops. So today we've got another file here, average.php. And we'll modify this to do something. But let's say now, like, that was fine. That was cool. We were starting from the top of the tree, and we were sort of going down the tree little by little. So if we had, remember, the top of the tree was just sushi, right? And then we had the three fish coming off of that, right? And then so on and so forth. And each fish had its own variation. Each fish had just one variations class, you know, and then they had multiple variations and so on and so forth. So that's fine. We were starting from one place. We were going down little by little, getting more in the tree. But let's say I want to get things from multiple branches in the tree at once. So let's say I want to get all of the variations together, or all of the prices together, not just the particular prices for one fish. So that's a good way, that's a good example of why I might want to use the slash slash. So here for, yes, was there a, no? Oh, okay. So here what we have is, this is just our standard line to construct our XML element. But here, what am I doing? This line of code that I have selected right here, what does this do? So XML, this is just my, like, XML element, right? and I'm getting this XPath. So the slash has me start at the root node, right, as we saw over here. And we're getting sushi, which is, so the root node you can imagine is something just above sushi. It's like the parent of sushi. And sushi is the root node of our document. So we're getting that. And then we're getting every single element that is some descendant of sushi that is the name price. Which means that we're getting the prices for, you know, every single fish's, all of the variations of every single fish. So if we go back to our XML document over here, when we do price, we're not only going to get these four prices here, which are a direct descendant of, you know, tuna, but we're going to get all of the prices for squid and the prices for salmon that go off the screen. We're going to get all of these at once, and they're going to be returned to us in an array. So we've got all of the prices now. So, and now what I'm doing is I'm just looping through each of the prices with this for each loop, which we saw last week, and I'm getting a couple of other things. So over here, I am getting, actually, you know what, let me show you what this does first, and then we'll go through the code. So if I go to average.php, it literally just prints me all of the prices, and then you see I'm getting the fish name and I'm getting the variation name. And so we'll go through the XPath of how you get these things here. So, okay. So, for each price as P. So P is getting me some node in the XML tree that has the level of a price, right? So if we just imagine that in isolation here, we've got price. And price may have children. In this case, it doesn't. We know it doesn't because we've constructed our XML document. But it has some parent somewhere. So what's the parent of price? Like, what? Like according to our XML document, what sort of thing has price as a child? What tag here?
Variation.
Variation, exactly. So there's some variation. We don't know what it is, but there's some variation. Right? So when I do in average.php over here, I'm calling xpath dot dot. That literally moves me up one level in the tree. So right now I'm here at some price. That's what p is. When I call dot dot, I'm going up here to variation. And if you recall, the only purpose of this line is XPath always returns you an array, even if there's one element. So I just have to get, you know, the first element of the array with that line. That's just a syntactical thing. And so here we've got variation. If you look over here, so the variation is, you know, the first element in our array. I'm printing out here the name of the variation. So the variation gets us, if we're recursing through our XML tree, and let's say we're on this price element. Let's pick one here, the squid over here. So we're on this price element, right? When I call dot dot, I get this variation tag. And then when I get the name attribute of that, I'm going to get the string with wasabi. And so that's how it's printing out all of the name attributes for the variation. And so I'm doing the same thing to get the fish name too, except I just have to go up two more levels. So if we look back at average here, so after I get the variation name, I also want to get the fish name. So here I've got name is xpath dot dot slash dot dot. So that gets me up two levels. So if we look at the XML document here, why do I have to go up two levels from variation? So if you remember, we started at price. We went up one level to variation. So why do I have to go up two levels now to get the fish name?
You have to go past origin and available.
I have to go past, is that what you're saying, this variation's here?
Well, origin and available to get the fish, right?
So that's okay, so origin and available are children of fish. So if we draw over here, we're already running out of space. So if we imagine that this is a fish, origin is here, like that, right? And available is here. And variations is here. So
okay.
In terms of XML language, actually, origin, available, and variations are all known as sibling elements. This is exactly like a family tree. This is the parent, these are the children in relation to the parent, and these three guys, they're all siblings together. But then under variations, we have our individual variation, right? I'll call them var here. And then those are the things that have, you know, the price that inherit from here, that are children there. So we started at price, we went one level up to variation, and we got this. And now we're going two levels up, one level here, and then one level here, and we're getting our fish. And that's how we get the name of the fish. And so it's pretty much that simple to use XML, although in practice it does get messy because there is a lot of syntax to go through and a lot of code to get through. And so when we get the name here, that just gets us the node. And then when I'm in my echo statement, so the node has attributes to it. And so I want the name attribute. And that's what I'm printing out here. And so it's that simple. This is what I get as a result. So that's a more, it's a more advanced example. And so you don't have to start at the top of a tree and go down. You can sort of work across multiple branches simultaneously. You can get all the elements of one branch. It's not that you're restricted to one path through the tree. Any questions about this? Yes.
You said that you need the at sign to get to attributes, but there was no at sign.
Okay, so at sign is if I'm using XPath. So let's say, okay, so I'll give you an example. Let's say I wanted every single name attribute in this tree, in this XML document. So if you look at this XML document, here's name. So I have some name under variations. I have some name under fish. Let's say I wanted to get every single name. I could do this XPath right here. I could just do /// at name. And this would pull me out every single name attribute in the document. It would get me them from the fish. It would get me them from the individual variation like that. So you use the at when you're going through XPath. There's a couple of other cool things we can do here. So if you recall last week, I said that in this example, every element of variation has a name attribute. But just because we do it this way here, we don't have to have every element of every node that is of the same type have to have the same attributes. So if we wanted, for example, we could do, we can just modify this a little bit here. Let's say we give this an attribute called spicy. Well, that doesn't really make sense, right? Spicy. There's a spicy attribute? Yes. Okay? And so maybe this has a spicy attribute, and this has a spicy attribute. Right? Okay, so now we have, in our document, we have some variations that have different attributes than others. So let's say I want to get only the variations that have the spicy attribute. I could just do, well, if I did this, if I did at spicy, I would just be getting the spicy attribute itself, but I wouldn't be getting the node that contains the attribute. Do you understand what I mean? I'd just be getting the string that says yes. I wouldn't be getting what is contained in it. But let's say I want to get all the nodes that contain a spicy attribute. I could do something like this. /// variation at spicy. In these brackets. So this is saying, start from like the bottom of my tree and look through the entire tree for every node that is called variation. And from those nodes that are called variation, give me only the ones that have the spicy attribute defined. Okay? So I can do that. I can also do something like this. Let's say now we have, let's make it even more complicated. Let's say we have this without wasabi has a spicy attribute equal no. Okay? So now we have spicy has different values. And let's say I only want the ones where spicy is defined as yes. So I can do at spicy equals yes. And I'll only get those attributes. So you can do it like that. Let's say now that we have a third attribute, let's call it popular. It's getting harder and harder to come up with attribute names. But let's say we have a third attribute called popular. And we want only the elements that have popular and spicy defined. So I can do at spicy and at popular. And I can use like my normal Boolean operator. So I can use and, I can use or here, like the same way you would use them in if statements. So this would get me, in this case, it would get me only that without wasabi node that is, you know, a child of tuna, right? Because that's the only one in our XML document that has at spicy and popular defined. If I put an or over here, well, I mean, in this case, it would just get me every single one that has spicy, right? Because in this case, the one that has popular also has spicy defined. But you see how you can use this and you can like extend it further and further and further. If we had, let's say, just to give you even more examples, since we have time here, let's say instead of having strings here, I just have, I have like, actually, no, that's not a good example. Let me think what else I can do. Oh, okay. So let's say here, let's say for some reason I want fish also to have spicy attributes. Okay, so this is quickly not making sense, but it's a illustrative example. So let's say now I want to get everything with a spicy attribute. So if you notice this over here just gets us variations, right? But let's say I want to get everything. Well, I can use the wildcard operator, which is the star. And so I can just do /** at spicy. So this gets me, star is a node, right? It'll refer to a node. It gets me all nodes for which a spicy attribute is defined. So that will get me the fish tuna. Well, did we define spicy for tuna? No. It will get me the fish squid. It will get me this variation. It will get me this variation. And it will also get me this variation. So you can like specify things as arbitrarily as you want and get whatever you want with this syntax. And so, yeah, so we've got the star also. Maybe we'll add the star here. Any node. We can add that to our list of stuff. And then the brackets, I guess, are specifiers, for lack of a better word. The brackets say, like, what are the characteristics of this node that are desirable, okay? You could also use the brackets for array reference. So let's say we wanted, what might this do? /sushi/fish2. So who wants to take a guess what this does? Second node, yes. So what would that be? What, identify it by its name attribute.
I have no idea.
Okay. So we start off at sushi over here. The first node is tuna. The second node is squid. Okay. So actually, this is something I made a mistake about last week that we soon found out when we ran some PHP. I thought things were indexed from 0, which is pretty much the standard in most programming languages, but the XML standard is start indexing at 1. So this is actually the first fish node. This is actually the second fish node. There's no indexing at 0. That's just something else to confuse you as you are programming if you've never used PHP or XML before. Okay, so yeah, we can also use the brackets that way. So, you know, this is a lot of stuff to remember. Let's say you don't remember all of this. Well, just Google XML XPath, and the website that I like is on w3.org, and it actually has down here, and there's something else called XML axes, which you can specify that you want child, you want descendants, you want parents. And so descendants are anything that falls below on a tree. Child is anything that falls below just on a single level, means you have to traverse one branch of the tree to get it. Parent is directly above by one branch. Ancestor is directly above by multiple branches. Anyways, you can specify XPaths like this. We won't really go into it because you can do everything you need to do pretty much like for this project just with the simple XPath stuff that we went. But this is called axis notation. But on this website there is so abbreviated syntax. And this gives you a lot of stuff that you want. So here, for example, selects the first parachild of the context node. Or you can also use last. So if we wanted to get the last one, we didn't know how many there were, we could use last as like a function call, essentially. in addition to using numbers. And so you get examples of how you use the double slashes. Another good website, if you Google XML tutorial, is the W3 Schools website, which you may have seen HTML tutorials from. But what it has, what I like, is it has a page of XML examples. And so if we go to XML syntax, maybe. Why did I Google XML? I want to Google XPath. That's what I wanted. Right. If we go to XPath examples, it gives you this cute little bookstore document, and then it'll give you a bunch of different things, like what will this do, what will these paths do, and it explains how it works. So if you don't remember, that's another good resource for you. Okay, so before we move on, any questions about XPath? Okay. All right, so another thing. So let's talk first about Project 1. I hope everybody has started Project 1. How do you approach it? Project 1 is, you know, maybe big in scope for some of you. What do you want to do? So the first thing I would suggest you do is look at the examples that I used last week and this week. Because if you notice, last week, well, what did we do? We did a sushi thing, which is, you know, essentially a restaurant menu, or very similar to a restaurant menu, right? And so we have examples of how you would parse that XML and put it into web pages. And we also did this shopping cart example, right? So you're going to want to keep track of this, the user's pizza orders in some sort of shopping cart. And so you want to look at the session code for that and see how we did that too. So you can store, you know, whatever they order in a shopping cart. So what sort of things do you think you want for this week's project? Like, how would you structure your page? I'm going to erase this. So, I mean, there's a couple of things. Like, first you need a front end, right? Like, what does the user see? And then you need a back end. Like, take the user's input and put it into some format that you can understand as an order. Right? So the front end is going to be displaying all the stuff on the web page. The back end is going to be like storing everything in the session variables or exporting it however you have to export it. Maybe you want to send the order as an email or something like that. So first you have the page, right? So what do you have to do for the page? You have to essentially display the menu, and then you have to give links like order this, how many of this do you want, that sort of thing, right? Then you also need a cart, maybe. Right? Like, what have you ordered? How many of each quantity? And that sort of thing. So the cart, you know, you can look at the code for that and adapt something similar. What about the page? How do you do it? So the key here is to keep it extensible, right? Which means if the people who run the pizzeria want to change the menu at some time in the future, they can change it only by changing the XML document. And so when you do this, you should think about, like, okay, not only do they want to, like, maybe they want to change the prices, okay, so that's easy. But, like, what if they want to add items to the menu, okay? Maybe that's a little bit more difficult. What if they want to add entire new categories to the menu? How do you support that, right? So, like, let's say for categories, like, you can have some sort of PHP that just, like, maybe you have some page, menu.php, right? And so if you want to allow for extensible categories, if you don't want to allow for extensible categories, menu.php is pretty easy. It just lists all of the existing categories and has a link to the menu for each category. But how do you allow for extensible categories? Like, let's say, so what are some categories now? There's like pasta, there's like pizza, there's drinks maybe, salads, whatever. Let's say they want to add a category, soup. I don't know if soup is there, but let's say they want to add it. So what do you have to do to menu.php to allow them to add or remove categories and be sure that your menu will always update? Like, what's the approach you want to take here? Like, the key is to make menu.php dynamic, right? So you're going to want to go through the XML document and find all of the category nodes, right? And then in menu.php, you'll put a link for each of the category nodes, right? And so then the key is, do you want now that link to go back to menu.php, meaning you can just like append get queries to your URL string? Like, so maybe you've got like menu.php and so, like, let's say this is the URL category equals, you know, pizza. Right? And so then when this gets passed to your PHP script, then what do you have to do? You have to go find the category pizza in your XML document and make a list of all of the things that fall under that. And then you can, you know, have another thing here. So, like, let's say then they click on, you know, plane and name. So maybe the dish name. Name equals plane. Okay? So then maybe they get a description of the dish, or they get, like, the sizes that it's available in. So, like, you can do this all with one page. You could also have menu.php go to another page, like category, right? Which will then look through the XML document for the categories. But, I mean, all of this is up to you. This is just how you should think about, you should think about how you want to structure your project. let's see, like some other tips. And so then maybe once they decide what they want to order, then you just have, like, you know, an add.php, which adds it to their cart. Right? And then you can have, like, an item equals, and maybe you just want to have each item identified by some number, or maybe rather a name, something like that, and then you can add it to their cart. So item equals, you know, 7, and quantity equals 3. So they want 3 of item number 7. And just an example of maybe how you want to structure this. And then cart, what does cart have to do? So who wants to tell me what cart has to do? Okay, so what's, first of all, what's the functionality that you want in a cart? Tell me a couple of things that you want to do in a cart.
You want to be able to add or delete items.
Good. What else?
It needs to display everything that has been chosen.
Exactly. Yeah. What else?
Return to the home menu or back to...
Yeah, you want to return back? Sure. Okay. Well, what about... So we have add or delete. We want to see what's already in the cart. What about changing the quantity? We want to be able to change the quantity, too. So you'll have to, like, implement functionality for all of these things in cart. And I mean, it's not too complicated. It's just something to think about when you get to structuring larger pages. And so you're going to want to keep your cart in the session variable, because otherwise there's no way to maintain it across single visits of a user. Everybody is relatively familiar with session? Yes? Or familiar with the example from last week? Well, I can show you really quickly. The key is, all you need is, at the top of your page, include session start. And then if you want to end a session, these two lines of code. Session start, and then session destroy. That's it. It's that simple. And then it will maintain data that is persistent. And it will maintain it in the PHP variable _ session. Okay, so now we're getting to the point where our pages are accepting a lot of input from our users, right? Like, before, like, a page, pretty much you just clicked on links, you looked at images. Now we're getting lots of input. And in this case, the input isn't really changing anything on our back end, right? So the worst that can happen if the user gives us bad input is they'll get something bad back that looks ugly. Doesn't look like what we intended it to look like. But next week, when we go into MySQL, which is a database language, or which is a database engine, sorry, now you're going to have data behind the scenes on your page that if it gets messed up, that's bad, or if it gets deleted, that's bad. And users can be malicious. Sometimes users can also just be stupid, but not malicious. And that can mess things up, too. So from this point on, you want to really start strictly checking everything the user puts in. And did you have something to say? Oh, sorry. It's okay. You want to strictly check everything that the user puts into your page and make sure that it's some input that you expect. And so I have a little example here of just... And you really have to check every single input. So this is security.html. And we can go look at it here. So it's a really simple form. Select the choice, yes or no, right? And then I select the choice, yes. I hit go. It says, I expected that, okay? And then no, we put that in. I expected that too. All right, so let's look at the PHP for this form. So this form just submits to security.php. So what is my PHP code here? So request actually is, if you haven't seen it before, it's just get or post. It's the get associative array or the post associative array. You can imagine combining those into a single array called request. Sometimes it makes it simpler to refer to that in your code. So we just have a simple if statement. So if the request box is equal to yes, print I expected that. If it's equal to no, print I expected that too. Okay, here it says if it's blank, right? If somebody just tries to go to the page without typing anything in, say, okay, I expected blank inputs too. Otherwise, this should never happen, you got me. So meaning, like, we don't really expect that the user will type in yes, anything other than yes or no. And so, like, a naive person looking at this web page might say, okay, yeah, it's pretty much impossible to type in anything other than yes or no. There's just a select box that says yes, and there's a select box that says no. And so the first thing that you can do is, if you just want to give it blank input, we can go directly to security.php, and you'll see it gave it blank input because there was no refer that set the request variables, right? But let's say we wanted to give it something other than yes or no or blank. How could we do that? Let's say we're a malicious user, we want to try and break things. How can we do that? I mean, there's only here a select box that says yes or no, right? That's all. How do we give it our own arbitrary input? I just want to show you that it's possible. That way you can, you know, sanitize every single input. Yes?
Put a question mark on so that...
onto the URL. Yeah. Okay, so we could do that if this were being sent via the get method. So if we change this to get, actually, then you'll notice that if we refresh here, if I put no, when I send it to security.php, it has in my URL box equals no. Okay, so if I just change that a little bit, okay, all of a sudden we get to the place where we're not supposed to be getting to. So, okay, there's one way. If you're going through get, the user can just put arbitrary stuff in the URL that if you're not checking for it, it may trip you up, right? Okay, but let's say we're not doing it via get. Let's say we're keeping it hidden under the scenes and we're doing it via post. So, any idea as to how, now that I'm doing it via post, how the user can change? Yes?
You could edit the HTML and for the page and just respond with that.
You could edit the HTML for the page, and since I'm using request here, I'm just going to push back on you a little bit, but this is good. Since I'm using request here, that would look for stuff in get too. But let's say I just change this so that I'm using only post. So even if I edit the HTML for the page, okay, yeah, I can edit the HTML for the page and change the values of the form boxes too, right? And I can put whatever I wanted to. Okay. But let's say I'm using post here. So yeah, you can edit the HTML for the page. Another thing that you can do is you can actually just tamper with the packet, right? Which I can do right here. Let me just make sure that I saved everything correct. Okay, so we tamper with the packet. Okay, this is just a cool little Firefox extension called tamper data. I think you can do this with live HTTP headers too. Select the choice no. It says here, tamper with request, right? And then if I hit tamper, I can now change no to whatever I want to change it to. And then I hit OK, and it will send that for me. And we've also broken the web page like this, too. So every single input that comes into your page has to be checked to make sure that it is something that you expect. And if it's something that you do not expect, you want to throw a clean error. So if we were doing complicated stuff with PHP, and this was going to do something in our code, this might cause some like parse error, some syntax error, and then they'd get an ugly stack trace on the page. You don't want to do that. You want to catch it. You want to say something like, sorry, it looks like your input wasn't correct. Why don't you try again? And send them exactly back where they came from. So this is just an example of, you know, what you can do. Who's played with tamper data or something similar before? Okay.
Do you know if something similar exists for
Chrome?
Just because Chrome has that incognito option where it doesn't leave any traces.
Well, Firefox, the new version of Firefox that they're developing is going to have that too. Let's try, since we have time. How can I get tampered data in my Google Chrome? Let's see. Edit post Chrome request.
You might have more luck if you get Google Help.
Yeah. Yeah, there might be a way, because Chrome actually has a lot of nice developer extensions built in. Like, you can see the CSS and you can do that sort of thing.
Basically, it's the equivalent of Firebug, but it doesn't have the cool, like, HTTP headers or anything
right.
like that. So.
Yeah. Live HTTP, I think you can do the same thing with live HTTP headers, too, as I'm used to using tamper data. It's also a good way, when you make your web page, you know, get tamper data and try and break it. I mean, that's the best way to test your web pages, too. I mean, when we grade Project 1, we will be testing it with stuff like that. So it should handle all errors gracefully. Okay, so that's it for XPath and for this little primer on security and so forth. And so, like, yeah, you know, this gets much more important when you have database inputs. If you know what a SQL injection attack is. If you don't, we'll go over it next week. If you do, you'll know that, you know, you can do nasty stuff with databases when people are not sanitizing the input that comes into the database. All right, so in the last 15 minutes or so, we're going to go into classes. So classes and object-oriented programming. So who's familiar with object-oriented programming? That sort of thing. A little bit familiar with object-oriented. Okay. So the idea of object-oriented programming is group all things that have a similar function into like a group, into one place. So like the first thing I guess we should go into are functions. Let's say I'm writing some PHP script and there's some piece of code that comes up all of the time. Okay, like let's say, for example, on every single new web page that I have, you know, I like to put at the top, I just like to do echo welcome to my page, right? And then maybe I like to also start session. Is it start session or is it session start? Let's figure that out before we do this.
Start session.
Is it start session? Okay. So maybe let's say like at the top of every single page that I write, I want to run these two lines of code. And I'm fed up with typing these two lines of code this many times. And let's say it's instead of two lines of code, it's 20. So what I can actually do is I can just create a function. I can call it like a function welcome. And then the function can just have these lines of code in it. And so basically what this does is it's saying, okay, every time I call this function, execute these two lines of code. Right? And so now instead of typing these long two lines or these long 100 lines, I can now type, and this should be in some PHP brackets too, so it gets nice syntax highlighting. I can just type welcome. And it will execute these lines of code. Okay, so you've encapsulated code that you reuse frequently into functions. And like, there's lots of functions that you can use. And actually, functions can take arguments. So functions would be pretty boring if they always did the same thing all the time. You want to have them take variables, inputs from the outside. So let's say we have welcome, and let's say we give it an argument called name. So and now maybe we want to print welcome to my page. Name. So now it's using the argument name, and it is, you know, changing what the function does based on the value of the argument. Okay, and you can add more arguments if you want to have like two arguments to a function. Maybe you have name and you have age or something like this. You can go more and more and more and more. And you've used functions before. You know, lots of things that you've used are functions. Print is a function in PHP. If you want to get the length of an array, count, that's also a function. Is empty. Start session is a function. Start session probably does a lot of stuff behind the scenes to get your session running, right? Okay, so these things are all functions. Now we know how to write our own functions. And this can be useful at times. So classes.
You have to include the function in every script you use it in? Or?
Yes. So actually, if we look at this right here, so we can factor out our function into a separate file. Okay, we can call it like functions.php or something like that. And then we can use this line here, require once, to include that. So you would put this line at the top of every PHP file you wanted to, in which you wanted to use functions that were defined in that file. So let's say we have a bunch of functions defined in classes.php that we want to use in this file. We do require once classes.php, and then we can call the function, and our interpreter will know what we're doing, because it'll know that they're defined in classes.php. And of course, you can include more than one file up here. You can just put as many require onces as you want. So
require once, like, copy and paste the code that's in the other file, or does it just...
I believe require once executes the code in the other file when it hits the require once line. Actually, yeah, if you recall, we did a test last week, and that's what we saw it do. So require once will make sure that all of these functions that you're defining in this file are defined over here. Okay, so classes are a way of encapsulating further. So in this shopping cart example for last week, we had a class defined called item. Okay, and a class is basically grouping variables and functions together in a single group. Okay, and so item has three variables, name, price, and quantity. And don't worry about the private and the public yet if you don't know what they are. We'll go over them in a couple of minutes. And then it has functions, get name, get price, get quantity. And so what we can do is we can actually do this. So let's say we have a variable in our script. And let's actually just look at add.php over here. So we've got a variable called item. And we're creating, new is a keyword that just creates you a new object. So class, in classes.php, item that we saw is an object. So we're creating a new object of type item, and we're seeding it with these values, item name, price, and quantity, which we just got from our post values. And so we're storing that entire object in the variable item. Okay? The variable can be called whatever we want to call it. It's called item here, it may be a little bit confusing. Because then you start to think, well, do the variables have to be called the same name as their class? No, they don't. Okay. And so now item is a variable that is not only associated with, like, it's an instantiation of a class, right? So it's an object that's not only associated with the variables it contains, it's also associated with the functions that it contains. And so we can call the getName function on item, and that will return us a value. So in this case, what does the getName function do for the class item?
It's really simple. It's just one line.
Yeah, it gets you back the name. And so, okay, you might think, all right, that's really stupid, because I can just do this in, what was it, add.php. Instead of doing item.getName, I could just do, you know, item name. Okay. So for those of you familiar with object-oriented programming, why can't I do item name? I'll let you look at classes.php over here.
Private.
It's private, exactly. So in object-oriented programming, we have this concept of public and private, right? We have a concept that this object will contain data that we don't want outsiders to mess with. We only want things internal to the object to mess with. This data. And so in this case, all of item's variables are declared as private. That means that somebody outside of the object, like this PHP script, can't just do item arrow quantity to get quantity, because then it could change the quantity, it could set things the way we don't want to set them. All right? So private means that only functions defined within the class, only functions defined within the class can access and modify these variables. That's why we need these methods, getName, to get us the name. And so what this does is, since we have this method, getName, it means that people can read the name of this item. They can know what it's called, but they can't change it, right? Because in order to change it, they'd have to access this variable here. But they can still know what it is because they can just use the method, getName. Okay, so and then the same thing for getPrice, getQuantity, getTotal. So getTotal just calculates you a nice thing. And so also we can have this little routine here. The other nice thing about classes is they're an opaque data type, which means that if you have a class, you don't have to worry if you're using a class that somebody else created. For example, like what's a class that we all use or you're going to be using in project? One simple XML element is a class, right? You don't have to worry like what's going on underneath, like what's private, what's public. doesn't even matter. We don't even know. All we know is it has, you know, these functions that we can use. XPath is one of them that are very useful for us. And so if we have this class item, we can change how it's implemented underneath the hood. But as long as we keep these public functions exposed, other people can use it in their code without it breaking, even if we change how the class works. And so that's another benefit of classes, other than encapsulation and helping you organize your code better. So one thing that classes, special to classes, there's something special about classes. Every class has to have a constructor. Constructor means when I create a new instantiation of this class, and an instantiation is like a specific instance, right? Like this is a prototype for the class. This is saying that every variable that's of this type class is going to have these things associated with. An instantiation is an actual instance. It's an actual occurrence of this variable in real code that we're using. So when I create a new instance, the constructor is called to populate all of these initial variables for me, right? And so the constructor, and that's just, it has an automatic, it's automatically called underscore underscore construct. This is how it's defined in PHP. And there's also destructors, which say when you are done using a class, how do you destroy it? We don't have to worry about that here. You won't really have to worry about that in any of your projects. And so constructor takes three arguments, name, price, and quantity, and it just sets these original initial values for these variables here. And so if you look over here at add.php, when I'm doing new item, if you'll notice, new item comes with three arguments, item, name, price, and quantity. That's because we're calling the constructor. And you call the constructor by just calling the name of the class, like item, open brackets, and then those things. Is that clear for everybody relatively? Okay. So, and so this is how it's used in the cart. We can go into another quick example that we'll build on over the next coming weeks, probably when we go into databases. So I wrote this. This is a class student. And so we have, you know, these couple of things. Maybe the student has a name, an ID, a phone number associated with it, grades, and a GPA. Okay? And so let's look at what the constructor is doing. We're taking a name, ID, and a phone number, and we're just adding those variables. We're setting grades to be an empty array. So if you imagine like every student has like homework grades, test grades, blah, 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 we're just going to store them in this array. For now, we're initializing it to empty, and then we're calling calculate GPA, which is going to be a private function that we have defined in class. And so we have our standard functions, get name, get ID, get phone, right? Get grades too. Like, so maybe we want to allow people to access their grades, but not to change them. So we have something here. And then public function get GPA. So now maybe we want to allow people to change their grades, but or the teacher to change the grades, let's say, but do it in a controlled manner. So maybe the teacher can't write a script that will like accidentally erase all of the student's grades. So we create like an exposed method, add grade and then grade. And so if we go this.grades, what do these brackets mean here? For those of you who remember, or for those of you who know. This just means push it onto the back of the array. Add this to the end of the array. So we're adding the new grade to the end of the array, and then we're recalculating the GPA because we have just added a new grade. So like another reason, like let's say you didn't even care about protecting the data. Let's say you just wanted to make it such that every time a grade was added, we recalculate the GPA. Otherwise, you might forget to, right? Because if you're doing it in code, you'd have to put in two lines of code now. So we do this here. And so this is a public function. And then here's another public function, change grade. And so you give it an index to like the nth grade you want to change and then the grade you want to change it to. And so first we're going to check that, you know, the index is, you know, if it's less than 0, you can't index an array negatively. So this is just another example of input checking. What else should I do here? Well, okay, so we have an array. Let's say the array has 5 elements. What are going to be valid values of index? 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4. These are going to be valid values of index. If they put something less than 0, that's an invalid array index. If they put 5, 6, 7, well, the array only has 5 elements, so that's not going to be a valid index either. So I should probably do something like this. Or index is greater than or equal to count, what is it? This. Dot grades. Okay, so just some more input checking. I'm saying, so make sure their index is actually a valid in the valid range for which grades exist, right?
So the array, the index is come from zero, but you just said PHP XML use from come from one.
Okay, so sorry, XML, the XML standard, which is defined by W3, counts from one. So this is not XML anymore. This is just an array in PHP, which is indexed from zero.
Okay.
Yeah, it is confusing. And to make it even more confusing, if those of you may have seen the bulletin board post, Microsoft Internet Explorer, I think it's Internet Explorer 5 or maybe Internet Explorer 6, likes to define XML to start counting from zero, even though the standard says one. So every single browser, because you can also manipulate XML in browsers. And you'll do that when we get to the last project, before your final project. But so every browser handles XML a little bit differently. Internet Explorer counts from one. Internet Explorer counts from zero. Firefox, Chrome, newer versions of Internet Explorer, they count from one. Yes?
We're only expected to do it in the newest version right now, right? Or are we supposed to do it in the older version?
Yeah, you're only expected to do it in the new version.
Okay.
In this project, anyway, you're not dealing with XML in your browsers. So don't worry about that. Okay, so anyway, so we have change grade, right? And so change grade just changes the right index before making sure that it's correct, and then recalculates GPA. And then what does calculate GPA do? It's just a simple function, loops over all of the stuff, and recalculates it. All right, so that's all for this week. This is an introduction to classes, and when we do database stuff next week, we'll build on this and see how you can make this interface with your own SQL database. I'll stick around for questions afterwards. Thanks very much.